This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Tonight, the Durham City Council is expected to take up policy recommendations for the city's police department. The meeting is just the latest in a series of events focused on how law enforcement in Durham treats minority citizens. The police department says allegations of racial discrimination are unfounded, but community groups say the statistics paint a different picture. Calls for policy changes from broad-based coalitions across the city led to recommendations from the Human Relations Committee and the city manager. We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on recommendations for the Durham Police Department? 877-962-9862. Our email address is sot@wnc.org. WNC reporter Jorge Valencia joins us now. Welcome back, Jorge.
Hello, Frank.
Remind us again, give us the background and the context for these reports and what the City Council is taking up tonight.
Well, to set the table for our conversation, Mayor Bill Bell assigned the Human Relations Commission last fall to study complaints that the police department had engaged over a long period of time in racial profiling. There were many complaints, but just to highlight a few events that happened. Last summer, a police officer fatally shot a 33-year-old Hispanic man, Jose Ocampo. Jose Ocampo was wielding a knife. And then in the fall, a teenager from Riverside High School, his name was Jesus Huerta, was fatally shot while in police custody. That event actually struck a particular chord with people. There were many vigils, there were marches, there were incidents that turned out violently after that. Now, the police was cleared in those incidents, but I think what people in the community were saying was, you know, if I'm going to trust you, it's not just, you know, what you say that you're going to do, but it's also how I perceive what I think what you're going to do. So that's sort of the context that we're in.
And some of the perceptions of discrimination are fueled by statistics that were unsettling, at least among many community members in this broad base of coalitions.
That's right. For example, there's this one number that comes from the district attorney's office. You know, about more than 700 people were arrested for small marijuana possession in the last 18 months, and the vast majority of them, happened to be black males. So, as you know, as part of all of this, the city manager Tom Bonfeld made recommendations to the city council. He presented them 2 weeks ago. He made 34 recommendations. They came in a pretty big book. It was 131 pages. And the crux of it was a recommendation that pertains to searches and whether or not police officers have to get written consent from a person in order to search them. What he's saying is that the officers do have to get consent and document it in some form. They can record it in video. They can record it in audio. They can get verbal consent and then document it in writing. And so that's sort of like the central one that we're looking at.
And, of course, we're talking about in this case, not if there's reasonable cause. If one thinks that a crime has been committed, you don't need consent. It's when a stop has been made and there's no sense that perhaps a crime has been committed. So it's a particular kind of stop that we're talking about. That was one report. There was an earlier report by the city's Human Relations Commission as well.
That's right. And that's the one that that the city manager was responding to and that he was presenting to the city council so that the city council can decide whether or not or how they would like to take action as part of a process for the police department to regain the community's trust. Now, at this hearing 2 weeks ago, it was just supposed to be a presentation from the city manager. But Mayor Bell noticed that the room was packed. I mean, they met in City Hall chambers. There wasn't enough space. People were out in the hallway. They had to move down to an auditorium on the first floor of City Hall. They were still standing room only. There were still some people outside. There were community groups who showed up. And Mayor Bell said, you know what? It wasn't going to be a public forum, but let's make it a forum. Let's allow people to talk. 19 people spoke, a lot of people from big community organizations here. But there was this one guy, young guy who spoke, who I think really crystallizes the tone of this meeting. It was this young man. His name was Victor Bynum, and he said he lived in MacDougall Terrace, and he declined to give his address. As part of this forum, you say what part of what your address is, and he says, you know, I'm not going to tell you where I live because the police is there all the time. So that gives you an idea of what the tone of the conversation was.
And just
like,
summarize for us then the results of these two studies. Tom Bonfield, the city manager, that's the latest, and that's the one that the city council is going to take up tonight. What was the summary of his findings?
Well, I think the biggest finding was you know, he said it at the hearing, and it was, you know, we do have some instances in which, like, unexplained racial profiling happens. Mm. I think that was the biggest takeaway.
We've invited Police Chief Jose Lopez to be on the program. He declined, but there was, at that hearing you talked about, it was a work session for the city council. A lot of people showed up. And let's listen to a former member of the police department, Phil Wiggins, who defended the police chief and the city's police department.
I believe the Durham Police Department and its officers have been unfairly accused of being racist by a few people in the community, and I believe those accusations are unfounded and will continue to be unfounded. The local Durham Lodge of 475 members and the state chapter of 6,100 members of the Fraternal Order of Police have voted to support the Durham Police Department during these challenging times for law enforcement across our country.
All right, so that's Phil Wiggins, former police officer, speaking in behalf of the chief and the department. Give us a sense of the ratio, people speaking in defense of and people who are critical of the police department.
I counted 19 people who spoke. 17 of them were critical in different ways of the police department. Two wanted to defend the police department. They were both former police officers. And in particular, Phil Wiggins wanted to defend the chief. He says that he's known the chief and his wife for a long time. They care deeply about this community. The chief's wife started a support group for people who have family members who work in law enforcement. It's a very taxing job for you as an officer and for your loved ones. And he says the chief is also a very compassionate person. He goes to people, you know, to their hospital when they get sick. He goes to funerals when somebody dies. So that's sort of what they wanted to present.
All right. So those are the presentations. The city council takes it up tonight. And joining us now are two members of the council. Mayor Pro Tem Cora Cole McFadden is with us. Cora Cole McFadden, thank you for being here.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. It's a pleasure.
City Councilman Steve Shule is here as well. Steve
Shule. Thank you for having me.
Cora Cole McFadden, tell us where we are in this issue. The council is going to take up these recommendations tonight. If there's a source of controversy that has developed since the presentation of the report by City Manager Bonfield, it's over whether police should be mandated to get written consent for these stops. And the city manager seemed to say, no, we don't want to force that yet. We want to leave that to the officer's discretion. How do you feel about that?
I don't think we should leave it to the officer's discretion. I have not shared that with the manager, so I hope that he will understand why I'm saying this. Let me just backtrack. I listened to most of the testimony that was heard by the Human Relations Commission, and every citizen who spoke, with very few exceptions, had concerns about vehicle stops. They said they were arbitrarily being stopped, no reason at all. At the point when the officer would speak to them, they could give them no reason. So I think it is important that citizens be able to, in writing, consent to vehicle searches. That's a major problem in Durham, and so we need to act on it.
Steve Shule?
I agree with Cora. As I said at the meeting, the work session meeting that Jorge described, I think that for reasons of civil liberties and for reasons of restoring public trust and for the kinds of situations that Cora described very well, I think that written consent would be important. I do think that it's the kind of thing that we're used to, in the sense that we're used to, that police officers are used to. If they make a stop, we've all been stopped by the police on occasion for speeding or whatever. They walk back to their car if they need to get a form, and they come up and you fill it out or they fill it out. I don't think it has to be much different than that. I understand that the police don't want an extra hurdle, but I think given the situation in our community now and the disproportionate statistics that are true about searches and the examples that Cora cited, I think we need it now.
And to be clear, again, we're talking about stops where we don't suspect a crime other than perhaps speeding. If you were stopped for speeding, that doesn't necessarily trigger a search.
That's
so
right.
If the officer decides that for stopping someone for speeding, I want to search your car, this is what you're asking consent for, not if you think some
That's
law
right.
has been broken. You don't
That's right.
Clearly, you're not asking for consent here. Still, the chief has said this is a hurdle, and it may present a safety issue for the officers of that department. Cora?
I don't understand that. But I do know, and I should have said this earlier, if you have written consent, that's a sure thing. Technology sometimes fails, as it has in the past. But I stick by what I said.
And, of course, one of the options would be to make sure that those cameras are on all
That's
the time
right.
to record the episode. Wouldn't that be enough, Steve? Do we need written consent if we can see a video recording of this whole thing?
I could conceive of technology that might make it unnecessary, but I don't think we have it now, certainly not in Durham. There is a lot of really good evidence that police officers wearing body cameras reduces the violence that is later inflicted on people that they stop. Not that happens very often. I want to stress that, but so that technology can be useful. But we don't have it here now. We're not documenting searches in that way, and so I think that we at this point need the written consent.
Talking to City Council members Steve Shule and Mayor Pro Tem Cora Cole McFadden on the state of things. We're going to say goodbye to Jorge Valencia, WUNC reporter, and we're going to continue our conversation on the state of things and take your calls at 877-962-9862 on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Today, talking about allegations of racial profiling and discriminatory practices by the Durham Police Department. Today on the show, City Council member Steve Shule and Mayor Pro Tem Cora Cole McFadden. And joining our conversation now is Daryl Atkinson, an attorney with the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, one of the organizations that called for the recommendations. Daryl Atkinson, welcome back. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Also with us is Reverend Mark Anthony Middleton of Abundant Hope Christian Church. His church is one of the participants in Durham Can, a coalition of community organizations and congregations. Reverend Middleton, good to have you here, too.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So, Daryl Atkinson, let's talk about your organization and sort of where your organization is and why you brought these considerations and these concerns to the City Council.
Sure. The Southern Coalition for Social Justice is a community lawyer and advocacy organization. We get involved when community members come to us with a problem. And so about 2 years ago, we worked with members of the Durham Southside community on a Ban the Box initiative. And so some of those same members of that community came to us and were talking about some of the issues that were happening in relation to searches incident to routine traffic stops and also in relation to low-level nonviolent drug offenses. And they felt that they were being targeted. So we started doing some research and we made some findings, and we armed those community members with that information, and they brought it to City Council.
What did you find?
Well, we found in Durham, and, you know, if we could just take a step back, our country, our state, our city is grounded in the concept of equal protection and equal application of the laws. And the data that we found is we aren't seeing that happening in Durham City and County. So, for example, African Americans make up 37% of the general population. They're 83% of the people who are searched incident to a routine traffic stop. The vast majority of those searches are obtained through verbal consent. African Americans represent 75% of the people who are asked for verbal consent to search. So the officers who are asking for that consent are working under the assumption that African Americans are more likely to have some form of contraband, which just isn't true. When it comes to drugs, as you stated in your earlier segment, over the past 18 months, there have been roughly over 700 misdemeanor marijuana possession arrests, and African Americans represent 82% of those arrests, even though usage rates show that various racial groups use and sell drugs at roughly the same rates. So these communities, their anecdotal kind of sense was grounded in empirical data. It was grounded in a reality. As a result, the Fostering Alternative Drug Enforcement Coalition came together with organizations like CAN and Durham Congregations in Action, Spirit House, a number of other community-based organizations. And we wanted came up with some solutions to these problems. And they came in the form of the five FADE recommendations: mandatory written consent for all vehicle consent searches, the lowest level, making misdemeanor possession of marijuana the lowest level enforcement priority for our police department. Because when we looked at the data, over 60% of those arrests were happening between the age group of 15 to 24. We were thwarting our kids' lifetime chances at employment, housing, education. And it really impacts all of the Durham community, because we need these people to be successful. We need them to be contributors to our economy. We don't need to cut off their chances at a hopeful future. Racial equity training for all police officers so they don't operate on their unconscious bias and make sure that our police department, the policies and procedures, don't produce disparate racial outcomes, and reform to our civilian review board so they can be some accountability from the police department to the community.
Reverend Middleton, let me ask you, one of the things that the police chief has said over and over again is that these statistics are not in there. The statistics may indicate levels of crime and criminal activity, but not racism, not profiling. There's nothing more his department can do. And that the statistics don't mean that there's anything his department can do to make things better.
Well, respectfully, the chief is wrong. At the other side, on the other side of these statistics are people's lives that are being impacted. 40% of our population is not hallucinating, and the numbers don't lie. Now, we can argue all day whether we're going to call it racism or accidental racism or whatever. I'm not really concerned about what you call it. I'm concerned about the impact. And quite honestly, the chief, with all due respect, we didn't elect the chief. We elected a city council. We didn't elect a city manager. We elected a city council, and they hired them. So I contextualize. I certainly take serious the chief's concerns and opinions, but I have to contextualize them. The chief, I think, is operating out of a mentality, a bunker mentality, out of a mentality that he's being attacked, that it's us versus them. And if you listen to the rhetoric and positions of our coalition since we've been engaged in this, we've never attacked the police as a racist, gun-wielding organization. We haven't called for anybody's resignations. So there's some shadow boxing going on here. The bottom line is these numbers are real. They're impacting. And we have an opportunity here in Durham to get in front of this issue and not become the next Ferguson, not become the next cautionary tale, and to do something. The fact that the Durham city manager said himself that there are indeed instances, empirically based instances of racial, I don't want to misquote him, there seems to be some racial bias in some areas of policing. I don't know if how far their offices are apart from one another, but the police chief needs to listen to what his boss has said, that there are indeed cases of racial bias in our police department. So that issue is settled. What we're talking about now are the policies that will correct it and implementing those policies in a timely manner before we become the next Ferguson. And we can start with written consent.
Steve Shule, let me ask you about these low-level drug arrests. That is a very important element in terms of the community's request. It was in Tom Bonfield's report. Where do you stand on this, and what can be done?
Well, I think that one of the most important things the city manager did in his report, and Jorge mentions a 131-page report. There are some 40 recommendations from the Human Relations Commission, which he took on. And the vast majority of those, I agree with what he said. One of the things that he said that is most important is that we, the city council and the city government and the police, cannot solve the problem of low-level drug enforcement by ourselves. This has got to be the courts. It's got to be the sheriff's department. It's got to be the DA. And the mayor responded last week by saying he was going to call together a group of people, those people, to start to deal with this. I think that we all recognize this as, and I was glad that the city manager set the table that way, that he basically called on the community leadership to deal with this problem. It is a tremendous problem. The mass incarceration of young African-American men is a real significant problem, one of the most important problems we face in this country. And it's intimately related to low-level drug enforcement. we have a chance, as our colleagues around the table have said today, to change that here in Durham. We can. We are not at the bottom of this, I want to say. You know, you look around the state, there was some good reporting in the Herald Sun recently about the state of North Carolina. There are some cities, I think Winston-Salem is arresting four times as many young African-American males for low-level drug arrests than we are. But we still can do better. We're about 23% below the national average, but there are some cities that are doing much, much better than we are. And we need to make sure that we're doing that.
Coral Cole McFadden, tell us about this low-level drug arrest. What should be done, and what's the role of the council in this?
I think that we should do whatever we can do within the confines of the U.S. Constitution, the state constitution, the Durham Charter, in partnership with the Sheriff Department, DA, and other entities to make this happen. We are losing a generation of young men. We need them. We need to change this direction that we're in so that we can have stronger families.
But how is that going to happen? I mean, there are laws on the books, right? And the police are charged with enforcing the laws. And so the chief is going to say, and Daryl, let me go to you next, and we'll go around the table. These are the laws of the land, and the police are charged with enforcing the laws. Can we say, ignore these, spend less time on this and more time on that?
We absolutely can. And police officers have discretion on how they enforce laws, and they exercise that discretion every day. Unfortunately, in the city of Durham, they're not exercising that discretion in an equal manner. So if usage rates are the same amongst various groups, right, usage rates for drugs, that means that people are possessing drugs and that they're buying drugs from their social network. So there's some kids that attend Duke who stay in some off-campus housing who are using some drugs. But those kids aren't being enforced the same way as the kids in MacDougal Terrace. And so our position at the Southern Coalition for Social Justice is not – the answer is not to go lock up more white folks. We don't want that to be the answer. We really want there to be a paradigm shift to where we start seeing problematic substance abuse as a public health issue and not a criminal justice issue. If we can make the intervention to for more prevention and for more treatment opportunities and less jail, we can get at the underlying problem and have our communities be safer and have people be more well and whole.
Coral Cole McFadden, again, what's the role of the city council in that? If that's a goal and you would agree with that, then what do you do as a council member?
We'll just direct the manager to make it happen. But I think that after we have implemented the racial equity training, we will see a difference. Depending on the content of the racial equity training, it will bring to the forefront all of the biases and if it's done right, that police officers or other people have. I was privy to training by C.T. Vivian, and the training was so intense that there are people who were so touched by it, affected by it, that they actually had to walk out of the room. They were angry. But what happened is, as a result of that training, they were able to confront their biases. And that's the kind of training that we need so that what Attorney Atkinson said will actually happen. They will be more prone to take a different approach, I think, to how they police. I really believe that training. And that's and I know we want something right this minute. But I think that we have to look at it in total, comprehensively as well.
Steve Shule, C.T. Vivian believed there was a problem of racial discrimination in this country, and I assume the people who went to his training also assumed that there was some kind of a problem, even if they one way or another exhibited this, even if they didn't intend to feel that way. They believed there was a problem. Chief of Police in Durham, North Carolina, does not believe there's a problem of racial discrimination in his department. He has said it over and over. He said it on this program. Can training work with leadership that doesn't believe there's a problem in his department?
Well, I think one thing to make clear here, excuse me, I do want to emphasize a lot of the positive actions that the police department has taken through this process. I mean, I think we're making a mistake if we just think, well, they haven't done anything and they're not going to do anything. I mean, the department just as in response to these recommendations, including one of the five FADE recommendations, is added bias-based policing training, you know, racial training against racially discriminatory policing for every new recruit and every current police officer. So I want to support that. I think that it's important not to to look backwards at this moment. Let's look ahead. The police departments say they're going to do it, and I know they will, and I know that will be enforced. The crisis intervention training for many of their police officers, their relations with Alliance Behavioral Health, these are all really important things that the department is doing that is extremely positive and I think can really help make a change. The data collection that they've ramped up so they can see which officers are making racially discriminatory stops. These are important things that the various community groups have asked for. And so, yeah, can it work? Yes, it can work. It has to work. And we have 515 uniformed officers on the street, and I've ridden with police quite a few times lately. There are some amazing officers doing young people doing a tremendous job under very difficult circumstances. We have a good police force. What we need to do now is figure out how to make it better. And I think that's what we're really going for here. These guys on the street, these men and women, they're not trying to be racially discriminatory, but the statistics don't lie. Let's give them the kinds of supports that they need to do it right. And I think that's where we ought to be heading.
And Reverend Middleton, you talked about that. I mean, in given the charged environment here, given what's happened at Ferguson, still none of the organizations that have come to the table, none have called for the police chief's resignation. It has been a very patient process up until now. And talk about that, because it's possible that every police department in the country could have this same problem facing them, and it could be on every radio show in the country. It's, the conversation is happening here in Durham. What about what Steve Shule says? I mean, are we, in a sense, leading the way? Are we a little bit ahead here in the city of Durham than in other places?
I think we are, in, to some degree. We're blessed and fortunate. We've had some incidents that could have very easily blown up into a Ferguson-type situation, but we've been blessed and fortunate not to, for it to reach that level. I do want to say that the police chief is a, and I say this respectfully, is a uniformed functionary. He understands chain of command, and he understands the power of taking orders. And there's no doubt in my mind that he and the officers under his command will do. You know, this is the United States of America. The guns and uniforms answer to suits in our country. That's the way we have it set up. They're under civilian control. So the wonderful thing about that is he doesn't have to believe that racism is real in order for him to do his job and do what he's instructed to do. That's the good thing about this setup. I think we're blessed that we haven't had a Ferguson-type situation here, but we certainly can. And I will say, and I'm glad that there are city council members sitting here. If next year at this time the statistics are still what they are today, then the tenor of this discussion is going to be very different, because we have an opportunity now to make some real steps forward, to implement some concrete, non-invasive, substantive tactics to address this issue. And I think written consent shouldn't be as controversial as it is. Listen, when I go in and use my ATM card or use my debit card at a store, usually they're videotaping me, but they also give me a transaction, a receipt, a piece of paper. And if our officers are already doing the search and they are indeed consensual, I don't know what the issue would be with giving our citizens a receipt. I think this will compel officers having to do that, compel officers to ask themselves, can I articulate a race-neutral reason, really, for asking for this search? And it would provide agency and control, more control to drivers that are stopped. I don't want to have the same conversation next year with these numbers looking the same as they do this year. And we have a wonderful opportunity to make sure that this discussion isn't the same.
Daryl Atkins and Steve Shule mentioned the keeping statistics and records so that we can go back and look twice a year. Tell us more about that and whether or not you think that'll be effective.
Well, it's one part of a panoply of recommendations. You know, the five that we focus on, we very much see them as a package deal. And so collecting data does have a channeling effect. When you know that the data is being collected, you have to think of those race-neutral reasons mm-hmm. for asking for consent to search. But I also want to take a moment, Frank, to really address this idea of what racism is in 2014. I think when, you know, some of the statements from the chief really illustrate a lack of understanding about how racial bias manifests itself in 2014. The, you know, we're very much wedded to this idea of an individual actor individual person does bad thing to other person, now we can single that out and call that racism, the Donald Sterling moment, if you will, where someone's caught on tape. But racism in 2014 does not operate that way. It operates in the form of implicit bias. It operates in the form of policies and procedures that produce disproportionate outcomes. We should judge the systems and institutions that we have by the outcomes that they produce. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we have an economy. And President Obama, you know, when he inherited, you know, the economy that was on the brink of disaster, and he instituted a stimulus package, and we judged him on that particular policy intervention by the outcomes that it produced. We looked at unemployment. We looked at NASDAQ. We looked at a number of economic indicators. We have to judge our criminal justice system, our police department, the same way. So if black folks are being stopped, arrested, convicted at disproportionate rates, it's very difficult to say that we are operating in a race-neutral way when those outcomes point to something very differently.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Daryl Atkinson is an attorney with the Southern Coalition for Justice. And by the way, Daryl, I should congratulate you on your award at the White House you received in June. Congratulations for
your
participation in the community. Mark Anthony Middleton leads the Abundant Hope Christian Church, one of the participants in Durham CAN, one of the coalitions calling for change in the Durham Police Department. Steve Shule, a member of the Durham City Council. Cora Cole McFadden, Mayor Pro Tem. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you so much.
Coming up on The State of Things, we'll take a look at a one-man show that explores the myths and facts around Rodney King. Stay tuned.